You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
And also streaming live on Instagram. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And by the way, if you love the show, please take a moment to go on Apple Podcasts and either review it or rate it. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I really appreciate your support. And if you would like to join me today, the call-in number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind and what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It is what's eating at you. And that is what we are here to talk about. Now, today I'm going to talk about how to stop binge eating, kind of a big topic. But before I get into that, I want to answer a question from Sharon. Sharon asks, could you clarify the difference between going into the kitchen at mealtime and saying, what am I hungry for? And when I'm thinking about the food mood formula and wondering about why I'm eating, like take a brownie, for example. Okay, I think I understand this, Sharon. First of all, at mealtime, saying, what am I hungry for? You're talking about physical hunger. It's lunchtime, it's breakfast, it's dinner, it's whatever. You're physically hungry and you're asking yourself, what are you hungry for? That's more like intuitive eating. You know, what is my body needing? Do I need protein? How hungry am I? Do I just want a salad? Do I want a sandwich or something more substantial? So that is checking in with your body, eating intuitively as to what it is that your body actually is craving from a physiological standpoint. The food mood formula refers to when you're wanting something because it will change the way you emotionally feel. So there's a difference between having dinner and then having some dessert because, if every once in a while we have dessert, and have some dessert and say, oh, that was delicious. That was really good cake or pie or whatever dessert you're having. And saying, oh, I want to eat cake and I can't stop eating it, because that is resolving something internal or emotional. It is distracting you from something inside. It is a way of coping. So that, hopefully, Sharon, that answers your question. That is the difference between, what am I hungry for? And, why am I drawn towards cake or cookies or ice cream or pizza or chips or whatever it is, that feeling of, I can't stop eating and I want that because it's going to change my way I feel. That's emotional eating. I want some chips with lunch. That's just lunch. Okay. So once again, if you have any questions, you're on Instagram, you can drop them in the comments, or you can give me a call at 323-203-0815. Okay, so how do you stop emotionally eating? How do you stop binge eating? Well, first of all, you got to stop dieting, because dieting is the devil. There's no other way to say it. Dieting keeps you in a toxic relationship with yourself. It keeps you from being able to eat intuitively. It tells you what you should eat. And it always involves deprivation. And the experience of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation always makes you want the thing you cannot have. So that is part of why dieting is not good. Also, it doesn't let you check in with yourself and learn to eat intuitively. If you ask a really little kid who hasn't been given food as a reward, hey, do you want, you know, they say they're hungry. You'll say, do you want, well, I'll just talk about my own kids. They'd say, I'm hungry. And I'd say, well, do you want an apple or do you want some cookies or do you want some peanut butter on celery? Or, you know, I don't know. One of my kids really loved peanut butter on celery. As if all those things were equal. So no good food, no bad food. And a lot of times they're going to choose the apple and not the cookies because they're in tune with their bodies. And then we grow up and we learn to be not in tune with our bodies. So diets keep you out of sync with what your body needs and knowing what your body needs. So also diets focus on what you are eating and not why. Right? There is always a root cause for why you are turning to food. Either you're deprived and you want the thing that you can't have, either you're trying to, you know, resolve some emotional conflict. It's a distraction. It's a comfort. It's expressing something. It's turning emotional pain to physical pain. It's displacement. You can get mad at yourself for what you're eating or what you weigh so that you won't get mad at something else or someone else in your life. Diets don't let you check in with that. They just focus on food and not what's eating at you. Also, deprivation leads to binging, not only in that we want the food we cannot have, but when we are hungry, sometimes we get to the point where we binge just because we're so deprived of food. So even physiologically, diets can trigger binging because you don't eat enough, you're going to want more and all of that. Also, diets create this good food, bad food mentality, this whole eating clean thing. Sheesh, what if you're eating clean, then what's not clean? What are you eating, unclean, dirty food? I mean, come on. Food is food. Some of it is healthy, some of it is unhealthy, and there's a lot of room in between. But diets tell you, well, this is good and this is bad. This is good to eat and this is bad to eat. And then it becomes, oh, I feel good about myself because I ate vegetables, but I feel bad about myself if I ate a carb. And then that makes your self-esteem too much tied to what you are eating and not who you are. So these are all some of the reasons why not dieting is the first step to stop binging. Now, what about from a practical standpoint? It's like, okay, yeah, but what do I do? What do I do if I am having that feeling of I'm being drawn to the kitchen, you know, like you know, just being pulled in, and resistance is futile? Well, one thing you can do is think about this. Ride the wave. You know, when you see waves in the ocean, and you don't have to be a surfer to know this, but if you've ever seen an ocean or been to an ocean, you know that the waves start building and building and building and building, and they build and build, and they eventually they crest, and then they diminish, and then they just go away. They just end, and they go into the sand. They're gone. Same thing with it, like that bingey feeling, that urge to eat, that, oh, I can't stay out of the kitchen. That feeling is going to build and build and build and build. But you know what? Eventually, if you just wait it out, it is going to crest and diminish and go away. So one of the things you can do from a practical standpoint is, I call it riding the, you know, binge wave or ride the hunger wave. Sometimes it has nothing to do with hunger, emotional hunger. And just know that it's building and building, but if you just ride it out, it's gonna go away. So that is a practical thing that you can do right away. The next time you have that urge to go into the kitchen, try that. Surf the binge wave. Ride it out. Okay, the next thing you need to do to stop binge eating is to figure out why you are binging. So often we focus on what we're eating instead of why. So if you are turning to food and if you cannot stop eating, there is a reason. I promise you, there is a reason. And if you've been listening to me for any time, you know the story about the person who said, there's absolutely no reason why Ben and Jerry's was calling my name. Absolutely none. I'm addicted to Chunky Monkey. And it turned out there was a reason, because the show she was watching activated some feelings in her about her own personal life. And before those feelings and thoughts could come to her conscious awareness, she went to Ben and Jerry's as a distraction and for comfort and to cope. So there is always a reason, even if you swear up and down, oh, there's no reason. I just have a thing for sugar. No, sugar or whatever you're eating, it is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. What we have to do is get really curious as to what is the problem? What is the problem? What are you feeling? How are you in conflict? That's the problem. Food is the resolution. Food is the solution. Temporarily, because it's a distraction. And eventually, there's only one way to get rid of feelings, and that is to express them and feel them and then respond to them. But first, you got to figure out why you're binging. What's going on with you? And of course, that's why I developed my food mood formula. Hi, Carly. I will get back to that in a moment. Hi, Carly Gash. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Nina.
Hi, Carly Gash. Can you speak up just a tad? A little bit?
Does it sound better now?
I think so. I'm also turning my volume all the way up, but okay.
Okay. Because that's my Mac on my phone.
Yeah, it's good now.
Okay. Thank you. I'll remove my... Okay. I hope now it's better.
Yes, it is. What's going on, Carly Gash?
It's just these days were hard, and I know I need to work to continue doing my job, but I'm like big time procrastinating this whole week, 3 days in a row. I'm not working. I'm supposed to call customers and do my business, but I'm not. So I'm sitting in this kind of, what do you call it, like a frozen state, limbo. I guess not believing in myself or something. Binging and...
You're sabotaging yourself.
That's true. Sabotaging big time and kind of having a hard time to go back to kind of being kind to myself and being more focused and clear in my head.
Okay, so what you're describing is some kind of self-sabotage, that you had this success at work and now you are not sustaining it and you are binging and you feel bad and you don't have that get up and go that helped you be successful before. So you're sabotaging yourself. And we want to look at why. If you are keeping yourself from what you want, if you're not doing something you want to do, or you're doing something you don't want to do, there's always a reason. So what in the calls that we've had previously, we do know that there is this attachment to suffering in your family. And as long as you are suffering, you're one of them. Even though consciously you want to succeed and you want to leave them behind and you want to make a lot of money and you want to do great, unconsciously there's another part of you that's pulling you back to being like the family. And I also mm-hmm. wonder if there's some idea about happiness. Sometimes we're afraid to be happy. In fact, that is one of the biggest obstacles to success with weight loss, with not binging. happiness can feel like a setup. And it's going to be taken away from you, or happiness is not deserved. And so when you get really happy, there's a part of you that goes, oh, I don't deserve this. Let me go back to the state I was in. Which of these resonates with you, Carly Gash?
Both of them, Dr. Nina. Recently, I just realized I learned to set boundaries with people. Finally feels good. But, you know, the last person who's left is my mom. It's very hard. And I resonate with happiness, the fear of happiness, because when I was 11, she got her first episode when she got sick. Life dramatically changed then, from like more or less child with, I always had a lot of duties when I was a kid, but you know, my mom was not sick, so I had just a little bit sense of, I guess, safety or something. But when she got sick, when I was 11, I just all of a sudden, I was 11 and I had this thought in my mind. I sat there and I said, shit, my life is going to be such shit because I'm going to be taking care of her. Because I knew even when I was 11, when they told me diagnosis, I knew she's going to be bad all the time. And she was, you know.
Okay.
So then, Carly Gash,
so is there a part of you that is not going to let something bad happen to you? If you are the person who's creating the bad, you control it. You're the one who's not working. You're the one who's binging. Then it's a way of turning a passive, oh, something can happen to you, like your mother can out of the blue become very sick mentally, into active. You're the one who's in charge of the bad.
You know, I also noticed this dynamic. Maybe, Dr. Nina, maybe I'm doing that because I noticed, like, once I start taking off, once I start doing good, she gets really, really sick. And then I cannot, everything crumbles down, whatever I build. I become very miserable and I attend to her. I'm honestly sick and tired of this dynamic. Because she is the only one person, because I set boundaries with all people in my life. Now I kind of just kicked out all this, you know, people who are not supportive or who are abusive or jealous, whatever people, I just kicked everyone out. She's the only one person I have to deal with, but I don't like dealing with.
Okay. So, and if you don't do well, so there's an interesting dynamic in which, or pattern in which you do well, she does badly. And you have to then give up you to take care of her. Well, I guess if you don't do well, you will not have to give up your life to take care of her. But maybe that pattern doesn't have to exist in that way. Maybe you can do well, she can do badly, and you don't have to give up you to take care of her.
Even when you say that, Dr. Nina, you can do well and she can do badly, even when you pronounce that, I have such an acute, like, opposition and pain. You know, like, no, no, I immediately go to, like, no, 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 you know. I'd rather give up myself to just kind of be attached to her. Well, right now, this is my, like, reactive thinking and reactive behavior, but I'm calling you to change this. So how can I normalize the idea that I can actually do well and be successful and be my real self, who is, like, a really successful and happy person? And if she does bad, how can I bear that? I mean, I feel like I'm betraying her if I'm being good and she's being sick, because it's not fair that she has that. And she really did a great job being a person with special needs and raising me as much as she could. I'm very grateful. She's an incredible person, but it's hard for me. So I would really like to kind of normalize this thought.
You have to let go of the thought that you are your mother's keeper and that you are the powerful one who can help her. and that it is your responsibility. And that does mean relinquishing that idea of Carly Gash to the rescue. Because Carly Gash to the rescue also means Carly Gash gives up. I don't know why I'm talking about you in third person, but it also means you give up your life to take care of her, which leaves an empty place, which is also then filled with food. You get to have and carry the abundance of success, of life, of a sense of well-being about your life. You are without giving that up to be the heroine in your mother's story.
This is so sad. Yeah, maybe I need to kind of decide it inside myself and believe it. I think once I reconcile it within myself, my mother, she will feel that. And she will feel, oh, she's not giving in to this old dynamic. Let me get sick so she comes, so she rushes to rescue me. And she will be self-reliant. Because I noticed, like, once I kind of work on myself, she reacts. And not necessarily she worsens, you know. Because
well,
I feel like she, even though
you.
She's a person that's...
So, again, Carly Gash, you got to give yourself permission to have good in your life and feel deserving of it and challenge any idea that says somehow this is not for you. And I know that I'm being very direct with you. Give up the pleasure of being the rescuer, because the pleasure of being the rescuer is diminishing your own life. Yes, it is frustrating. Yes, it is difficult, but there's also a, I'm the only one who could save her kind of a feeling. That is something
exactly.
You gotta give up. Yeah. And enjoy the feeling of, hey, I'm making my own life work. I have the pleasure of that, rather than of being the rescuer to your mother. And maybe that's the way that you two relate with each other. But that is a toxic way of connecting. When you are relating through need in that way, when you're the rescuer and she's the victim, that's not a satisfying way of relating. Certainly not for you.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I agree 100%.
I know it's hard, Carly Gash, but you know, just give yourself that permission to be to have the benefit of all your hard work in work. Because the benefit of all your hard work with your mother is just more heartache. You are not the only person that can help her, and she can also in her help herself.
No, I'm literally the only one, because her relatives, her aunts who like damaged me in the first place, literally like almost killed her.
You can
like,
help her
literally...
without. Okay, you can help, but this is the trap. Do you think that if you weren't here, that she would just completely fall apart? I don't.
I witnessed that, and it took me 3 years to bring her like to a normal. They literally locked her in their apartment and gave her a teeny tiny sleeping space on the floor and on their patio. That's
okay,
how horrible they are.
I'm going to suggest this, that you don't have to give up your success to help her. You can help her without giving up you. That there's that part of you that's giving up you that is causing the problem, causing you to stop working, causing you to binge. You don't have to give up you to help her. You can take care of you and take care of her, but without this sacrifice.
Okay. I like that. I think I can
balance.
Do that.
Yeah, balance is good. I think you can too. So keep us posted. Keep us posted.
And it's not hard. It's just new, Dr. Nina. You know, it's a new way of behaving and being. But I'm very willing to implement this new working functional way of relating and being. I like that.
I'm glad you do, and I look forward to seeing how that plays out.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome, Carly Gash. Talk to you soon. Bye for
Thank
now.
You. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, if you, like Carly Gash, would like to talk about what's eating at you, the number is 323-203-0815. All right, so after you stop dieting and during this process, you're surfing that binge wave, that hunger wave, that emotional eating wave, whatever you want to call it, you're emotionally surfing. You want to figure out what is eating at you. Why are you turning to food? And sometimes that is very clear and sometimes it is not so clear. That's why I created the Food Mood Formula. If you are not familiar with it, you can go to my website, drninainc.com, and you could download it right now or wait till the show's over. Dr. Nina, drninainc.com, and just get your food mood formula for yourself. So you want to look at, like, okay, what's going on? What is it that is happening within you? And you want to look at also what is eating doing for you? Because it is binging, emotional eating, stress eating. It is a frenemy. It is not just an enemy. It is a frenemy. It is doing something for you. It is not just hurting you. It is helping you in some way. Be really curious, not critical, curious, not critical, about what it could be doing for you. You know, how is this helping you? Is it distracting you? Is it numbing you? Is it displacing uncomfortable thoughts and feelings you have about some other part of your life onto you? I can't tell you how many people say, oh, I'm so mad at myself because I've been binging all week and I've gained 5 pounds and I'm so mad at myself. And I said, well, who'd you be mad at if you weren't mad at yourself? And at first, of course, it's nobody. Everyone's great. I love everyone. And then it comes out, oh, mad at their boss, mad at their spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, kids, someone, neighbor, mad at someone other than themselves. So then you want to look at, well, if I were not thinking about food, if I weren't focusing on what I'm eating and how much and what I weigh and all of that, what's on my mind? That is a very important question to ask yourself. What's eating at me, essentially? The next step is to make peace with yourself. What do I mean by that? Learn a new way of responding to yourself. Because often we attack ourselves and we treat ourselves in such a mean way that we end up eating just to get away from our own mean voice. So thoughts and beliefs, ideas lead to feelings, lead to behavior. So if you're only focused on the behavior, nothing's ever going to change. You're going to be in this battle forever. And I don't want that for you, as you know. If you've listened to me, I don't believe in recovery and being in recovery. I believe in liberation. I believe in freeing yourself from this way of being in relationship to yourself and to food and to the world. You can liberate yourself. You can break free and you can be in a totally different mode. And then food becomes, what do I want? What do I want to eat? Oh, that was good. Instead of your best friend and your worst enemy. So one of the things that you need to do to make peace with yourself is to start turning your inner critic into a friend. You know that inner critic. That inner critic is toxic and mean. That inner critic is the one that says things to you like, you know, when you talk to yourself and you say, oh, can't believe you. And often, how do we know the inner critic is there? When you talk to yourself in the second person voice like this. I can't believe you failed to do that. I can't believe you messed up. God, you are such a loser. God, you can't do anything right. You're never going to succeed. You're never going to lose weight. No one's ever going to love you, right? These are things that people say to themselves all the time. And maybe you can relate to that. Well, if you're talking to yourself like that, how are you going to feel? Kylie, Josh, Carly Gash, I see you on Instagram. Drop a comment. How are you going to feel if you talk to yourself in that mean, harsh way? You know, you're disgusting. You're so gross. These are all things people say to themselves on a daily basis. You're going to feel terrible. You're going to feel discouraged. You're going to feel horrible. You're going to feel like you hate yourself. You're going to feel sad and disgusting, not just disgusted. And then when you feel that way, because you've just said something to yourself that made you feel bad, you cannot simultaneously be cruel and harsh to yourself and nice to yourself. You can't say to yourself, oh, you're so disgusting. Can't believe you ate all that. God, you have no willpower. And then go, oh, but I feel good about this. Right? Carly Gash says, it feels horrible. I freeze. I procrastinate. I binge. I become extremely sad and helpless and hopeless. Kylie is also saying that it's really hard. It's broken. I don't go anywhere. Yes, you can see people, you suffer. You can't make yourself suffer and then comfort and support yourself, right? Those things don't happen at the same time. You can't be nice to yourself and mean to yourself at the same time. So if you've just been mean to yourself and you feel terrible, guess what? Food is going to help. It helps you cope. It gets you away from your own mean voice. It turns off your mind. You go into the binge zone. People have called it the dead zone, the blank zone, the I'm not thinking, I'm not feeling, the zone. And that's how food helps you. But of course, it hurts you because then you feel worse afterwards. So what's really important is to get rid of this inner critic. We all need a little bit of, tiny, tiny bit of an inner critic to keep us in line. But we don't need to be critical the way we are to ourselves. We need to be a friend to ourselves. If your friend ate a bunch of pizza and was bemoaning that fact and saying, oh my God, I can't believe I ate that whole pizza. What's wrong with me? I have no willpower. I suck. Would you say to your friend, yeah, you do. You're disgusting. I can't believe you ate that pizza either. No. Unless you're like a really mean friend, which I don't think you are, you would say something encouraging and supportive to your friend. You would say, hey, it's okay. Let's look at why you ate that pizza. Don't be so hard on yourself. There must have been a reason. What's going on? Were you like so hungry that you just couldn't stop eating? Is something eating at you? Let's talk about it. How about if you show up like that with yourself? Kylie is saying, I said to myself the other night, having to go to the grocery store after work to get an ingredient for dinner, I said, too bad for me. Instead of presumably too bad for me, rather than, of course, I don't want to go. I've worked all day. I'm tired. So the last thing I want to do is go to the store and deal with all that. Instead, too bad for me. Well, at least you didn't say too bad for you, Kylie. So that's progress. Too bad for me rather than, oh yeah, this is hard. I really don't want to do this. You know, but I'm going to go and I'm going to get it over with. But yeah, instead of acknowledging and validating yourself, it was too bad for me. How about a little bit more of a friend? If a friend said, oh my God, I've worked all day and now I've got to get in the car and go to the grocery store, you would not say, Kylene, well, too bad for you. Mm-mm-mm. You would not. So if you wouldn't say it to a friend, a child, a dog, someone you love, do not say it to yourself. Why do I say a dog too? Because people are so nice to their dogs, right? Me included, you know that. People say, oh, so cute. So, oh, such a sweet boy, such a sweet girl. I love my dog. My dog, and then when, or the dog so can't stop eating, right? Because dogs are dogs. Like, oh, so hungry, always hungry, so cute. You know, not, oh, my dog is so disgusting, has no control. We got to start treating ourselves the way we would treat others. So turning that inner critic into a friend. One way that you can recognize your inner critic is when you talk to yourself in that second person. When you say things like, oh, you're so disgusting. I can't believe you ate that. I can't believe you ate that. You know, how about switch it to I? Even if you say, I can't believe I ate that, it's hard to be mean to ourselves from a first person pronoun, or I should say it's a little harder. It's easier to have that kind of distancing language and say, you are so gross and you have no willpower, than it is to say, I am so gross, I have no willpower. See, I can't even do it like pretending. It's even hard to say it as an example. It's easy to say, ugh, you are so, ugh. It's hard to say, I am so, ugh. So catch that negative shaming you and talk to yourself from an I place. And if you wouldn't say it to a friend or someone you love, do not say it to yourself. Also, take care with your tone. You know, the way we say things has a lot to do with how we feel. Like you could say, you know, you're going to be fine, which feels a lot different than you're going to be fine, right? How you say something conveys so much meaning. Oh, Carly Gash likes that if you don't say it to a dog, right? You can resonate with that, Carly Gash. So if you wouldn't say it to any dog, including my amazing dog, Zane, some of you know Zane the Dane, my deaf, somewhat slightly blind Great Dane, who is, you know, occupies such a huge spot in my heart because he's such a big bundle of furry love. If you wouldn't say it to Zane, don't say it to yourself. How's that? And what you say, be careful of the way that you say it. Say it with kindness. You know, even if you say, like, let's look at it the other way. You're so disgusting. Like, if you say, you're so disgusting, right? It loses its power. Now, I am not advocating that you say that to yourself that you're disgusting. I use that as an example to show how powerful tone can be. You can say a vicious, horrible thing, horrible words in a sweet tone, the words lose their power. The words lose their power. So when you are nice to yourself, you feel good. And when you feel good, you don't need food to feel better. So this is one very significant way that you can change your relationship with yourself, which will change your relationship with food. Later on, I'll get to how do you deal with emotions that are painful and difficult. But I now want to share another way that you can make peace with yourself. And that is the one diet that I advocate. Oh, yeah. I'm into one diet. Just kidding. It's a word diet. It's a word diet. It's about eliminating certain words from your vocabulary because these words do not help you. They just hurt you. So first word is fat. Now, I wrote in my book that I saw this on Instagram. You probably have seen it too. You aren't fat. You have fat. You also have fingernails. You aren't fingernails. I don't know who originally said that, but that's a good one, right? But so often we use fat as if it's just like it's a swear word. It's the worst thing that we can say. And fat is also not a feeling. We often say, well, we feel fat. And therefore, we don't know actually what we're feeling because fat is not a feeling. If you're saying you feel fat, maybe you feel like your feelings are too big and too much. Not that you're consciously aware of that. You're just feeling fat. But let's translate that into what it really means. And let's get rid of that word. Stop saying that you feel fat. Say, I feel upset. I feel scared. I feel anxious. I feel angry. I feel happy. I feel like, actually use the word instead of a different thing. I feel burdened. I what's the feeling of being burdened? You know, overwhelmed. So eliminate the word fat unless you are saying it like I'm making sure that I have enough good fats in my diet. Otherwise, we don't need to use the word fat. And it often is a way of describing how you're feeling like there's too much going on. So think about whether some of these might resonate with you if you often feel fat, which I also call that one of the two F words. One of them is, you know, that is an F word that we shouldn't use. The other F word is not that one. The other F word is feelings, because we treat feelings as if it is the F word, but it's not. It's just feelings are natural human emotions. They are responses to situations. They are not character flaws. So if you ever feel fat, maybe you're, what's too much? Are you having problems at work? Are you worried about your kids or upset with them? That happens. Are you mad at someone in your life? Someone that you have big feelings about someone? Are you concerned about someone in your life? Do you miss someone who's moved away or passed away? That can be a big feeling. Are you dissatisfied with some aspect of your life? Is that what's weighing on you? So these are things to think about. Another word in my word diet is can't. Now, Henry Ford famously said, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. So if you say, I can, that's possibility. Things can happen. There is hope. You could say, I can do this. I can be happy. I can have a good day. I can have a good life. I can get this job. I can meet someone wonderful. I can have a good and happy life. And that makes you feel good. It makes you feel optimistic and hopeful and positive. But if you put a knot on that, it becomes cannot or can't, then it instantly changes the way you feel. If you're like, oh, I can't eat that. I can't lose weight. I can't stay on my eating plan. Good, don't, because it's a diet and diets are bad. I can't take care of myself. Right? It's so discouraging and so just makes you feel bad. And then when you feel bad, because you've just said, I can't do that. And again, as we talked about earlier, you can't discourage yourself and encourage yourself at the same time. I can't leads to, which leads to food to make you feel better. The next one is, well, they're kind of interchangeable. Dumb, stupid, idiot, any of those kinds of words. If you say, oh, I, that was so stupid of me, or I'm so dumb, or God, I'm such an idiot. We say these things about ourselves all the time. Same rule applies. If you are calling yourself names, even though you may, you know, you are perfectly aware that you are not lacking in intelligence or basic reasoning, you know that. Why are you calling yourself names? Again, call yourself names. You feel bad about yourself. Food takes you away from that bad feeling. Here's another one. The N-word. Normal. Normal. The worst. Again, I saw this great Instagram meme. It's a picture of a girl and her mom folding laundry. And the girl asks, "What is normal?" And the mom just says, "It's just a setting on the dryer." Exactly. I love that. Normal means conforming to a standard, usual, typical, expected. And obviously, there are some standards of behavior in our society that are expected and typical, and behavior outside of that isn't normal. Yet many of us wonder if our thoughts, our emotions, our beliefs, our ideas, our wishes are normal, if our appearance is normal. And the answer to that is it's totally subjective. Most of that is subjective. If you're raised in a religious environment where you're not allowed to question the Bible or question authority, you're not normal. You have questions, you're seen as abnormal. If you grew up in an Orthodox Jewish household, for example, that's not considered so good. But if you grow up Reform, that's encouraged. Yes, question, ask, wonder. So what's normal in one is not normal in the other, and vice versa. And of course, think about it as typical. There is no typical. So just what's right for you? What feels right for you? What is right for you? Not comparing yourself to some subjective view of what's so-called normal. The next word is ridiculous, which according to the dictionary, ridiculous means deserving or inviting derision or mockery, absurd. Well, this definition is also problematic because the notion of what's ridiculous can be very subjective. It is definitely ridiculous to ask a homeless person for some money. That would be ridiculous. But it's ridiculous to think that, you know, my dog is going to sprout wings and fly, although that would be super cool if he did. But that is not how the word is usually used. It's often used as a dismissive way as a way of dismissing our feelings. So, you know, one of my patients told her father that she didn't really like this movie that he was raving about, some movie. He thought it was amazing and she didn't like it. And he told her, "Well, don't be ridiculous. That movie was really great." Like, how ridiculous that you would disagree with me. Right? And then we call ourselves ridiculous and it becomes this meaningless word that only serves to make us feel bad. How am I doing on time? Oh, I only have a few left. I'm going to keep going. Should. How often do you find yourself using the word should? Especially when it comes to food or eating. You know, I shouldn't eat that. I shouldn't have eaten that. Or, you know, I should do that. Or I should do more of that. Or I should be doing more exercise. Or I shouldn't want that. Or I shouldn't need that. Or I should be better at this. I should be... Should. One of my professors used to say, "Don't should on yourself." So cute. So true. Don't should on yourself. All it does is direct us to feel anxious or not good enough. And again, we're going to feel bad. Oh, I should have and I didn't. And now I feel bad about myself. And then when you feel bad, because you've just should all over yourself, you can't simultaneously make yourself feel better. And so you're going to use food to cope. The last one is but. Well, actually, I'm going to add to the last one. I didn't put it in the book, but I would like to add to it. But is another word that can feel very disempowering. And think about the following statement, like, "I got that promotion, but it was just because I worked really hard. Like, if I were really smart, I wouldn't have had to work so hard. I feel good today, but that could change tomorrow." All right. Well, when you take away the but, you're just left with, I got that promotion. Good for me. Or I feel good today. Right? But sort of negates the thing that you just said. It's like, oh, I really love you, but I wish you would kind of negates the love. So don't use that on yourself. The word that I want to add is perfect. Perfect. There really is no perfect except maybe in geometry or something like that, something actually measurable. When we talk about having the perfect life, the perfect body, eating perfectly, all we do is make ourselves feel bad. There is no perfect. You are perfectly imperfect, and your challenge is to embrace that and embrace all the qualities that make you your perfectly imperfect self. And that is our show for today, by the way, because when you feel good about you, you don't need food to cope. And that is how that works. Thank you so much for joining me today here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio, or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts. I will not be here next week, so have a very Merry Christmas, those of you who celebrate Christmas. I will be back in 2 weeks before the end of the year. I will see you then. Take good care. Be curious, not critical of yourself, of your perfectly imperfect self. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.